Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, my co-host is the retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, and we're going to meet a civil servant, Minnesota National Guard member, and check in with the Department of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars and talk to the State Command Sergeant Major of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Traditional Guard members drill primarily one weekend a month. That means nearly all of our soldiers and airmen have other careers and other responsibilities outside of their military service. Two of the most prominent responsibilities are family and employment. The Minnesota National Guard recognizes this challenge of balancing responsibilities and provides resources to assist. Our family programs teams work tirelessly to support our military families. They offer military youth programs, transition assistance for members preparing to leave the military, and a connection to other valuable resources. Our employer support Guard and Reserve program, known as ESGR, ensures that employers understand exactly what it means to employ a Guard member. The ESGR program also recognizes the standout companies in our community who provide exceptional support to our Guard members, be it at home, at the office, or in uniform. We all do a better job and feel better about it if we've got the right support. Here in Minnesota, we've got the right support.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Doug, we've got an interesting guest in the office We're in the studio for today's show, and we're going to talk a little bit about diversity and dual status in the Minnesota National Guard. Would you like to introduce him?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Tom. And what a great pleasure to have in the studio with us today, Captain Jesse Seabrooks II. Now, the interesting thing about Jesse Seabrooks here is that he currently serves as a district court judge seated in Chisago County, Minnesota, and you're also a judge advocate in the Minnesota Army National Guard, and you are assigned as the Brigade Judge Advocate for the 34th Expeditionary Combat Aviation Brigade, or the ECAB. Judge, Your Honor, Captain, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, and thank you for pronouncing Chisago correctly.
Well, I'm very familiar with Chisago. That's where my father used to live, and so I spent a lot of time in Chisago. My mom currently lives up there as well, so yeah, very familiar with it. No, most people will say just Chicago or something because they don't know.
Almost everyone calls it Chicago.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Great to have you in here. And what a unique opportunity we have to talk to you and really this career that you have, this dual career. But I do want to start with learning a little bit about you and how you came into the military and then how you got to where you're at right now. So tell us a little bit about your military service.
Yeah, certainly. So first and foremost, both my parents, my mom and my dad, both served active duty Army for 22 and 21 years, respectively. So I wasn't foreign to the idea of military service. I'd seen it in my household. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. I graduated from law school out there. I passed the bar in 2012, and I'm working for about 2 years. And in 2014, I filled the call to service. So I commissioned in the Ohio Army National Guard. I left for training in 15. I met my now wife at my military training. I joined the Ohio Guard. I deployed with the Ohio Guard. And when I get back from deployment in 2018, my then girlfriend, now wife, and the mother of my child, invited me to move to Minnesota instead of us living in Ohio. So that's how I got here. And my call to service was back in 14. I've been in the Guard ever since.
Well, that's just an interesting thing. And, you know, obviously you moved to Minnesota because that's, you know, what your wife said you needed to do, which is a good thing. And so you found a home in the Minnesota National Guard, which is great. How has that complemented what it is that you're doing right now?
You know, so one of the great things about being a Guard member, especially as an attorney, is you get practical experience right up front, right out the gates. So even when I was deployed, I got to do two courts martials, which is analogous to a civilian jury trial. When I got here, I got integrated in the legal community almost immediately because we have other Guards members who are also attorneys on the civilian side. So I had a network as soon as I moved here. But in addition to that network, you know, being a Guardsman, being a judge advocate, every day I'm challenged with a new area of law that I haven't heard before, that I'm unfamiliar with, and I learn how to get spun up on new areas very quickly. And I think that's what made me a better attorney And I actually think that was one of the qualifications when I applied for a judge. That was one of the positive benefits I talked about with military service, is that in that service, I get exposed to new areas of law all the time. And it's incumbent upon me to get really spun up on that area. So that's what I enjoy most about my military service as a lawyer, is being challenged in new areas and learning new areas.
We're speaking with Jesse C. Brooks II, who is a district court judge for Chisago County and also a member of the Minnesota National Guard as a brigade judge advocate. So you've got a bunch of professional-type memberships. You're in the Minnesota Association of Black Lawyers, the Minnesota National Guard African American Black Heritage Council, National Guard Association. What is it like, or how does membership in these councils impact you and in the direction that you head for your career within your career in the Guard and in the civilian side?
You know, the best part of those memberships really is going to be the camaraderie and the mentorship that I get out of it. So even something as recently as the National Black Prosecutors Association, when I was a prosecutor, I'd meet other prosecutors from different parts of the nation who had different or like experiences. And we got to have that fellowship where we talked about some of the similarities, and there'd be some coaching on some areas that I can improve. Also met actually other Guards members and reservists in those kinds of organizations. So the membership itself really does, it feeds my fellowship, and it does, it really does mentor and challenge me to grow in different areas. That's part of why I enjoy being a member of all those organizations.
And would you say then that the membership, the experience you've had in those organizations is one of the contributing things that then had or got you to the point where Governor Walz then elected you or selected you to serve in the 10th district?
The memberships, yes. I will say, by and large part, I think my military service was really one of the guiding forces. Because of the reasons I talked about earlier, being able to get well-versed in new and challenging areas, because that's what I do now as a judge.
Right. And so was becoming a judge, was the 10th district, was that something you had your eyes on, or how did that come to play?
This is the fun thing about opportunities, even when you're not looking. When I lived in Columbus, Ohio, being a judge was an aspiration that I had. But when I moved here, you know, for family obligations, when I moved to Minnesota, I really hadn't thought about it. But another judge, I just finished up a trial. The judge says, "Hey, Jesse, I want you to come up to my office." And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, before he calls the disciplinary counsel, at least he'll tell me what the issue is. And I'm sitting in his office. He says, "You know, Jesse, I think you should consider applying for the bench." And he walked me through all the reasons why he think I'd be a decent judge. And honestly, it was that person reaching out and telling me that he saw something in me. That's what encouraged me to apply recently. And in applying, I still thought it was a far-fetched notion, and it's something that would be accomplished later on in life. So I put up my name out there just to get the ball rolling, and it worked out a lot quicker than we all expected.
Yeah, well, that's great. And I do want to talk a little bit more, especially about that work-life balance, the balance between you being a judge, your service in the military. But we do need to take a quick break. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the dual service. Your wife and you both serve in the Minnesota Guards. We're going to talk about that and then a few other things. So we'll be right back. Please stay with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today is Doug Wortham. And we've been speaking with Captain Jesse C. Brooks II, who serves as a district court judge in Chisago County, and he's also the brigade judge advocate at the 34th ECAB, Expeditionary Combat Aviation Brigade. And Your Honor, I want to ask you, you're very busy, but your wife is also an attorney in her civilian job, and she also serves in the military.
Yeah, we're very unoriginal. So we're both attorneys on the civilian side, and we're both judge advocates on the military side. My wife is the big jag for Brigade Combat Team, 1st Brigade Combat Team, where I used to actually served under her. I was a little jag when she was big jag, and now I'm at the ECAB. But I will say this, my wife does a phenomenal job. Major C. Brooks does a phenomenal job as a brigade judge advocate. And the time that I got to work for her, I actually learned a lot about leadership and the idea of leading people. She's actually really great at personnel management, and me not so much. So having the opportunity to work, not alongside, but to work for her, really did help me grow, I think, as a leader.
Doug, yeah. I'm anxious to hear this one because they've got two small children. That work-life balance that you like to talk about?
Yeah, but before...
Makes no sense here.
it's interesting, but before we go into that, I just have to ask if Little Jag and Big Jag, if those are official terms, do you use those terms around the house? How does that work?
You know, my deployment, there were just two of us. It was me and Captain Spurrier. And so Captain Spurrier was the brigade judge advocate. I was the trial counsel. And just, you know, jokingly, we started saying Big Jag, Little Jag, and it just stuck with me ever since. All the commanders get it, too. It's easier for them.
Yeah. So, you know, the work-life balance is extremely important. You know, I served just about 32 years, and I know the toll that it takes on family. And you've got two very young children, and your wife does a phenomenal job, as you stated. It's great to have that network, obviously, or the support network. It's obviously evident that you both know the importance of service. But how do your kids deal with that? You know, mom and dad are both serving. And you're off to go do judge things, and then you're off to do weekend things. There's a lot of stuff going on.
You know, so I found this as a kid, too, that normal is relative. So they're growing up in an atmosphere where mommy and daddy are both in the service. Hey, this weekend, mommy has to go do Army work, so we're going to stay with daddy. Hey, this weekend, mommy and daddy both have to do Army work, so we're staying with Lolo and Lola, which is what they call their grandparents. And you know, there are days I'm in the basement always doing judge daddy work. So we found for our kids, for them, this is how they've grown up. So they don't know any different. For us, for Shay and I, the reason we can get along is because we just have a plan and we dedicate who's going to have to work harder that day. Sometimes we can both do equal shares. Sometimes one parent's going to have to take the heavy load. But we both know that we're doing what's best for our kids, and we're willing to make those sacrifices and work a little harder, even if it's unbalanced, for the sake of helping raise our children.
Yeah, and it's important. And you'd mentioned before that your mom served, and so service isn't something new. The military isn't something new inside of your family either.
Correct. Yeah, and so for Shay, her dad was also a Vietnam veteran, so she had some inkling of what service entailed. But it really helps that we both have an idea of what service is, because it eliminates a lot of friction that I've seen in some households where you're not dual status and the other partner doesn't understand why you have to go do this exercise.
And so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about inside of your military service. So you deployed.
Yes.
And you have to, as a legal counsel for the commander, have a very good relationship with the commander. So on your deployment, what was your scope of responsibility and how important is that relationship to have with that command team?
So we were a two JAG shop. Even though Spurrier was Big JAG and I was Little JAG, I was trial counsel, which meant I was responsible for a lot of the criminal and administrative matters. And then Spurrier was responsible for everything else that was encompassed. But because we were a two-man team, we really shared a lot of the responsibilities. And as part of it, we had a weekly sync with our boss, Colonel Betts, and we'd both be there. And Colonel Betts would rely heavily on both of our knowledge bases. So Spurrier would talk about finances, administrative, or things that were in his scope. And if then there was a question about a criminal matter or a trial counsel matter, the colonel would look at me, and he'd lean heavily on my words and my advice. So building that relationship was integral to our success, and it did help that I had some civilian prosecutorial experience before I got there, and I think that lended some credibility. But because of our relationship, it's very imperative that I know what I'm talking about and that we have a close relationship.
Again, we're speaking with Captain Jesse Seabrooks, who is the Brigade Judge Advocate for the 34th Expeditionary Combat Aviation Brigade and also a District Court Judge. Can you tell me, were you involved at all, or what experience have you had with, like, the Veterans Court? So back in the civilian side here, have you had any experience with that?
You know, I didn't have the opportunity to do that, and it's something that I'm looking forward to as a judge. We are growing it out in we call it the PIC. So in the 10th District, we have Pine, Isani, Chisago, and Kanabic. The four of us have a symbiotic relationship. And there's a treatment court, veterans court, that's still in motion there. And I'm looking forward to aiding where I can, but I haven't had any prior opportunity or experience with vets court.
And just so I understand, you know, we talk about it being a veterans court, but it's not a means to keep veterans or service members from assuming responsibility for whatever the infraction was. It's just a different process to streamline how things are taken care of for the veteran. Can you just tell us a little bit about what a veterans court benefit is?
Yeah, and so like a lot of counties, the idea of doing diversion is not rewarding bad behavior, but instead putting in services that are rehabilitative and helping to make sure that this person isn't further exposed to the criminal justice system. And so to incentivize that, we sometimes offer a diversion or stay of adjudication where if you do what you're supposed to do, this will no longer be a criminal offense. It'll be gone. But the court itself, the sanctions and requirements are really intensive and require the participants to do a lot of things just to really ensure that they have those measures, those rehabilitative measures and behaviors in place.
It's really a harder path to get clear of the problem than if you just accepted your punishment.
It honestly is. Yeah. If you just did traditional probation, you'd, just sit on your hands for a couple of months and you're probably free to go. But for Veterans Court, we're telling you that you need to go out and you need to actively do things that are going to work towards your betterment.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that explanation. So we've already talked about your service, how it supported you inside of your civilian service as a judge. There are a lot of listeners out there. We've got an expansive of audience. And so if you were talking to a group of young professionals, right, what would you have to say to them about service in the military in general, seeking a career inside of the legal or lawyer aspect, attorney way? What would you have to say to those people and how it's benefited you and how it could benefit them?
I would say for service, there are so many inherent benefits, not just for personal growth, but there's some financial and other incentives as well. And I will say the military is what helped me grow as a professional. For all young professionals, my advice is fail forward. Go out, take a chance. If you don't make it the first time, grow in it and do better the next time. Honestly, that's how I got where I was and where I am today. It's by taking chances, not always doing great, and then learning and doing better the next time.
Well, fail forward. Great advice. And you're still a very young judge, so you've got a lot of legs ahead of you, and I wish you the best in your future. We really appreciate you taking the time to come in today and spend a few moments with us on Minnesota Military Radio. Again, that is Captain, Judge, Your Honor, Jesse Seabrooks II. Thanks again so much for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with more Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today, we've got my co-host is Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to meet the VFW Department Commander. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
In partnership with the Lutheran Social Services, Minnesota Service Corps is a nation-leading program designed to bring essential, community-based services directly to veterans and their families across Minnesota at no cost. Due to its unique structure, this program also provides resources to previously underserved areas in greater Minnesota. Services include individual and family counseling, financial counseling, debt management, addiction counseling, disability service, and in-home counseling. The goal is to help veterans and their families to develop skills and draw on their own strengths to bring about successful and lasting family stability. After serving our country selflessly, veterans and their families can know that we stand behind them and we're ready to serve them. For more information or to request services through CORE, contact your CVSO or County Veteran Service Officer or call 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening of this segment, we're going to visit now with the Department Commander for the Veterans of Foreign Wars here in Minnesota. Joining us in the studio is Barry Hendrickson. Barry, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Appreciate it.
Barry, I understand you served in the Army Reserve for a few years.
Yeah, 22 years. Yeah, I got in right out of high school from White Bear Lake and joined and spent 22 years in the reserves. One tour in Iraq in 2003 and retired as a major.
Do a little bit of special training. Were you a Ranger?
Yeah, I had rare opportunity. I was the general's aide in the 205th Infantry Brigade in the 1980s. And when I went down to my infantry officer basic course at Fort Benning, I was the only reservist who got a slot because the general made it happen for me. And so I went to Ranger School in 1987, and I couldn't be recycled because they wouldn't have continued to pay for me. So I had to make it through. And
Was it as tough as everybody says?
It was the best of times, the worst of times, just get through. But once, now I look back, it was great. At the time, not so much.
And you served for 23 years or 22 years, and most of that time was reservist till the very end, and then you got called for a deployment. And as a result of that deployment, you're eligible to join the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Oh, yeah. I had my 20 years in pre-9/11, and I was getting ready to retire because our boys were, you know, 2 and 4 at the time, and my wife was pressuring me to retire. And then, you know, when the planes hit the towers on 9/11, I told my wife, so much for that plan. You know, if I have served for 20 years and never had to go anywhere, I'm not going to turn my back on my country. So I did my tour in Iraq in 2003, and then I came back and retired.
How long did it take you to join the VFW after you came back?
You know, they were giving out memberships when we landed. And Spring Lake Park VFW did a great job of sponsoring us. We had our awards ceremony there, and they gave me a discount on my membership, and I got a life membership in 2005. And, you know, here I am 16 years later, the state commander.
Some of those old veterans that were part of that, they saw you guys getting off the plane and said, let's go
get
them.
Oh, yeah.
We got some fresh soldiers here. Let's go pick them up.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
No, they were doing that when I got back from Vietnam, too, so don't feel bad about it.
Oh, no. You know, I was lucky. When I got off that plane, when I came home, I got welcomed. They're, you know, hugs and kisses. And you Vietnam guys didn't get that, so thanks for making sure it would never happen again, and welcome home.
Well, we didn't want to run out of members, so thanks for joining. Let's talk about membership. How is the membership in Minnesota in the VFW?
Yep. So in Minnesota right now, we have 30,000 members. And, you know, there's over 300,000 veterans in Minnesota. Not all of them are eligible, but there's a lot of eligible veterans out there. And we had 80,000 members as recently as the 1980s. And what happened was all those World War II and Korea, veterans, when they came home, mom took care of the kids, and, you know, dad didn't have to worry about all those other things because the kids didn't have the organized activities like they do today, so he could go to the VFW. Now, we have male and female that serve, both, and they both have jobs, and they both have to take the kids everywhere they go. Everything's organized, so and they're not as much joiners of traditional organizations as much as we would like, and we can't be as patient. We had a long gap between Vietnam and the current conflict. Our membership is aging, and we need those young veterans. And sometimes they might not know what we do. They think the VFW is a bunch of old guys hanging out. But, you know, as you know, we do great things in our programs, and we just need to continue to get that word out that, you know, the VFW, no one does more for veterans. And, you know, we need you. Because when we go to Washington, D.C., first thing they ask is your membership growing? Is it shrinking? And we never want the politicians to think they can turn their back on veterans. So that's why membership's critical.
We're speaking with Barry Henriksen, the department commander for the VFW in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. And Barry, I've been a member, life member, since the early 70s. So I've been through these ups and downs. And we've tried everything, recruiting new veterans. Fortunately, there aren't as many people eligible. As you say, there's a big gap. And one of the things that's happening, when I came back, they were just forming the Vietnam Veterans of America, and that got to a point where it's going good, but now it's a last man standing organization. It's going to go away. We don't want the VFW to go away, but we really don't want to send people off to war again either.
No, I've said is that, if 30 years from now we don't have eligible veterans, that's a good thing for the VFW that, you know, we're not sending. And I've got a son who's, you know, currently serving, and, I hope he never becomes eligible.
Well, we'll see how that all plays out, and we'll see if something happens between the American Legion and the VFW sometime in the future. I hope I'm around to see it.
Yeah.
Barry, as the department commander, it's tradition that you have a commander's project.
Absolutely. My project is Folds of Honor, and it's actually a joint project also with my auxiliary president. So Folds of Honor provides scholarships to the children and spouses of deceased and disabled veterans. And they have a chapter here in Minnesota, and we're due off to a great start. My company donated $15,000. We had one VFW, Monticello Post, donated $20,000. So
smelling pull tab money.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of the money comes from, the charitable gambling. Every VFW, if you have charitable gambling, you need to donate that money. But our money comes from everywhere, and we've already exceeded last year's total. But we're going to do it until June, and it's going great.
So Folds of Honor, your Commander's Project, is there information on that at a website?
The Minnesota VFW website at Commander's Project's right there, MNVFW.
And contact information's in there.
Yep, where to send the check and everything about the Commander's Project's right there on our MNVFW website.
Now, Barry, one of the things we talked about on this show is that if a veteran had some issues, medical issues, while they were in the service, that they need to go visit their county veteran service officers so that they can determine if they're eligible for some medical care at the Minneapolis VA or anywhere in the country, and they'll get it started. But the VFW and the other veteran service organizations have advocates to help process that claim and document the claim and work those things. That's pretty important, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. You know, we have at the VFW, we have our claims office right down at the federal building, and they lead the entire nation as far as claims process. They do a great job. Our claims office gets inquiries from all across the country, and they'll help any veteran, whether or not they're a member of the VFW or not. Our claims office is second to none what they do for veterans, and fabulous job.
And Barry, I understand most all of the veteran service organizations work closely with the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. They do a great job out there.
Yeah, I think our VA here, you know, VA gets a lot of bad words a lot of times, but it's second to none, the Minnesota VA.
My understanding that they're rated on a 1 to 5, 5 being the highest. In the last 6 years, they've been rated 5 and one of the top rated VAs in the country. So we're lucky right here in Minnesota.
We're very lucky. Yep.
Barry, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about your interaction with an organization called the Commander's Task Force. We're talking to Barry Henriksen, the department commander for the VFW in Minnesota. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today has been Doug Wertherman. We've been talking to the department commander for the VFW here in Minnesota, Barry Henriksen. And Barry, I wanted to talk a little bit. We've got an organization here in Minnesota called the Commander's Task Force, which is made up of 8 veteran service organizations, the VFW, of course, American Legion, AMVETS, Paralyzed Veterans of America, DAV, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Marine Corps League, got to have the Marines in there, and the Jewish War Veterans. I understand that the CTF has monthly meetings all year long, and what they're trying to do is come up with some legislative priorities. Can you tell us about your experience with CTF?
The CTF does a fabulous job of bringing all the organizations together so we can have a unified front, so not every organization's off doing their own thing. And we meet monthly. And, of course, the important thing is we tell people is Veterans Foreign Wars, we're nonpartisan. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I care that you support veterans. And so we've got a lot of veterans, make up 13% of the population, big voting block, and they vote. And so we have our priorities, and, it's important that, we work hand in hand. And generally, the politicians also agree that military issues are nonpartisan. The problem, though, sometimes is these bills get put with other things and then become a football. We like clean bills. Vote up or down on our issues. Don't put our issues with a bunch of other pork.
But they have a tendency of piling them all together and saving them for the end of the session.
One big soup.
One of the things CTF does is they work closely with Commissioner Herkey, the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and he helps support the CTF, but the CTF is also up there making sure that his budget is approved so that he can take care of the homes and the programs and services for our veterans.
Oh, absolutely. Commissioner Herkey does a great job. He was just at our midwinter conference this past 2 weekends ago. So, we work very hand in hand.
So, Barry, all year long, the CTF puts together these legislative priorities. They've been put together. They're posted on the CTF website. And it's all leading up to Vets Day on the Hill, which is going to be coming up in a couple of months. And you want to get as many veterans as you can in Minnesota over to the Capitol and in there to meet with their legislators. Are there a couple of priorities that you'd like to point out to our listeners today?
Yep, there's a couple here. One would be increase the state grant given to veteran service organizations. That grant has not changed since 2009. And obviously, as everyone knows, costs are going up. We spend more and more for our people and everything that we do, but we're not getting any more. And I think I heard a rumor that the state has a little bit of money they're trying to decide what to do with. So we can definitely help them out with that.
You know, I told you we don't talk about politics on this show, but we know that the state legislators, both camps, are talking about spending here and spending there and giving some back. Might be a good year to get some of your legislative priorities in there, as long as they've got a little extra money.
Yeah, you know, we had great success last year getting the Veterans Court through. That was great, and we hope to have a lot of success this year.
Well, I hope we can get a lot of veterans over there talking to their legislators and promoting these legislative priorities. And, of course, the one thing we talked about off the air was state of Minnesota. I think it's a law that says that they give bonuses to veterans that go serve. And they did it for World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. But the current serving veterans have been kind of overlooked, haven't they?
Yeah. And it, obviously a difficult thing of this is, you know, normally our wars or conflicts, 4 years, World War I, 4 years, World War II. Vietnam was longer. But this current conflict, basically 20 years. And so it becomes difficult kind of finding what's an end date. And I think we're coming up with, now that we've pulled out of Iraq and Afghanistan, to look at start this process. And, you know, the recommendation would be, you know, $1,000 for someone who served in the combat zone and $1,500 to a family if they lost a loved one. And so we're just starting that process. But, you know, I think it is important, you know, to do something. We've done it in the past, every conflict, and it's a way of showing some appreciation to those who have served.
Well, and good luck to you on that. I hope we get lots of veterans up to the Capitol to work on that, and let's see if we can carve out some of that surplus and reward those that risked their lives and went and served and took time away from their family.
Yep. Yeah, and COVID obviously has affected a lot of things that we do. Normally, I'd be going to Washington, D.C. in a couple of weeks for our national legislative mission. But because you can't wander the halls of Congress in Washington, D.C., we're going to be doing virtual meetings. But we do intend to be at the Capitol with our hats on coming up this spring. And we'll have buses bringing out veterans from all across the state to make sure that they hear us and they see us.
Barry, we got about 2 minutes left. You've been the VFW commander for about half a year. You've got some months coming up left. What's left to get done before your term is over?
Well, now's, you know, the hard work, the heavy lifting. You know, we've had a lot of events, but we, you know, you've kind of started that ball rolling. But, you know, it's kind of Sisyphus. We're getting up that hill. We don't want it coming back down on us. So, you know, membership, the legislative initiatives, projects. We've got a lot going. We've had a lot of major events. We just had our midwinter conference. But there's a lot to do, and the time is getting short for me in my year. But I've greatly enjoyed serving as state commander and look forward to the rest of this. And I'll be active forever in the Veterans of Foreign Wars, because we got to make sure we take care of our veterans.
Barry, we still got about a minute left. We mentioned charitable gambling. A lot of the posts have charitable gambling. And when they do that, to whatever degree they're successful, they have to use a large portion of that for community service. And we don't talk about that much, but your posts are supporting all kinds of organizations all over the state.
Oh, there's no doubt. Every post that has charitable gambling, that money needs to be spent in the correct way to maintain their status. And they're very active in their community and helping out veterans and veterans throughout Minnesota. It's a huge amount of money that is raised.
As well as the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and a lot of local organizations. And so the guys that go down to the VFW aren't just going down there to get together. They're raising funds, they're doing things, and they're helping their communities.
No, they're doing great work. And that's one of our other bills this year, is to try to get property tax relief from the state for VFWs.
For the post.
Post homes.
There wasn't much traffic during the pandemic. No. Barry, we're about out of time. I'd like to thank you for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yep, thanks for all that you do, Tom.
Thank you, sir. That was Barry Henriksen, the department commander for the VFW in the state of Minnesota. Joining me now is the senior enlisted leader to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
You bet. Good afternoon, Tom, and thanks for having me.
Just a polite warning, we've got your predecessor in the studio with us today, former State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Yeah, well, hey, it's great to hear your voice. And, you know, one of the best things I remember from my time in the position you now hold was when we got to get out and visit with units, the soldiers, our airmen. And I understand that you recently got to do one of the most rewarding things, and that is to welcome a unit home. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So we've got a Task Force 1 of the 194th that was deployed overseas in Kuwait, and then, you know, we're also being utilized in Afghanistan at one point, and they were also had soldiers that were over in Syria and other locations. But their deployment is coming to a head now, and they were down in Fort Bliss for the last couple of weeks demobilizing. And myself and Command Sergeant Major Whitehead were able to go down there and visit with soldiers down at Fort Bliss as they're demobilizing. And then we had the we were able to double tap, I guess, upon that. And as they were returning back into Minneapolis, we were able to meet them out at the airport a couple of days now as they have different dates for flights coming in. And we'll be actually going back out there on Saturday again to greet another couple flights coming in.
Yeah, it's always great to bring our units home, our soldiers and our airmen home. One of the things that I know was really big and has been for quite a while is this biathlon. And in years past, we've had some challenges, if you will, about having that biathlon up at Camp Ripley. But I understand that we've got the Chief of the National Guard Bureau's biathlon coming up. What can you tell us about that event?
You know, it's a phenomenal event, and it's actually, in some regards, like a feeder. They have the Army, I'm going to slaughter the name, but it's essentially the Army's all-Army competition program, where essentially they're allowing soldiers to compete toward making the Olympics. And this has been a feeder program for some of that as part of the biathlon team. But this year we're going to be hosting it up at Camp Ripley. It's going to be the 10th through the 18th. And as part of that, we're going to have the Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau, Lieutenant General Sassville, and his senior enlisted advisor, Tony Whitehead, will be in attendance for a portion of it. So it's just a phenomenal event. And that brings teams from, you know, all 50 states, well, potentially all 50 states, and to include, you know, the three territories and District of Columbia. So it's truly a all 54 event. And this year we're actually going to have four soldiers from the Croatian Army come and compete in it as well. So now we're making it international.
Sergeant Major, gives you a chance to showcase Camp Ripley to the rest of the force.
Absolutely. It's a phenomenal location. And, you know, we are ideally suited for doing winter training such as this.
Sergeant Major, I saw some things in the news over the last couple of months about the Army's come up with some new programs for retention bonuses. Is that going to apply to the Army National Guard as well?
You know, a great question. We are proud to announce that as of February 1st, we have two bonuses that soldiers that are within 12 years, so they call them obligors, but soldiers that have 12 years or less will be eligible to receive a re-enlistment bonus of either $6,000 for 4 years or $15,000 for 6 years. And if there's a federal bonus that's also available for that soldier, it doesn't preclude them for that. So they can actually receive both if they're eligible. So it's a phenomenal program. We're just excited to roll it out. The governor was very excited about it. Adjutant General's very excited about it. Hopefully it's received very well amongst our soldiers.
Recruiting and retention have been doing well anyway. That'll give them a big boost.
You know, it's challenging times right now, Tom, with COVID and everything else that's been going on. So any and everything that we can do to tell our soldiers thank you for your service, we absolutely appreciate it. It just makes it that much more beneficial.
So, Sergeant Major, we have just over a minute left here, and we've been talking a bunch of Army stuff. Let's talk a little bit about members of our Air National Guard. I understand there's a couple of events coming up, something about Red Flag, and then there's some recruiters that have been doing some great things as well.
Absolutely. I'll be as brief as I can. So we got about 175 airmen from the 148th Fighter Wing out at Nellis Air Force Base for Red Flag 22-1. And it's a huge event, just to give you the scope of it. There's over 100 aircraft and 3,000 personnel from around the United States and internationally that are going to participate. And it's essentially looking at Air Force vulnerabilities and be able to capitalize on strengths and then also exploit adversaries' weaknesses. So it's a huge event. And we're just, you know, absolutely excited to be participating in it. And then the other thing I'd just like to say regarding the Air National Guard recruiters, we had two recruiters that just knocked it out of the park. Master Sergeant Sprigg, he was the top recruiter for diverse accessions. And Master Sergeant Todd, who was the top recruiter for accessions overall. And they're both with the 133rd out of Minneapolis.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, guys.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Captain Jesse Seabrooks II, Commander Barry Hendrickson of the VFW, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, my guest host, Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the Military Order of the Purple Heart and the Society of American Military Engineers. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.